Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Nick Gillard, and DR Kurnaz of Back of the Nest. And could it be that Palace will have a new owner? The Sun were reporting this week that Crystal Palace Chiefs are in £220 million takeover talks with a mystery Chinese businessman. Do you believe this?
Yes, I don't think it's a coincidence that now this is popping up. As I remember, a month or two ago, we were talking about Frank. I can't pronounce his surname.
Thai bloke.
Yeah.
Oh, so Thaksin Shinawatra.
Yeah.
So, hey, look how it rolls off the tongue.
Boom.
Shinawatra.
Next question.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like, yeah, there's some truth to this, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Mr. Frank. I'm going to call him Mr. Frank again. We didn't see anything really happen.
I heard rumours before the Americans took over back in, Parrish said, no, there's nothing going to take, nobody going to take us over in the October. And then by the following March, nobody had taken over, but they'd actually bought into the club. I actually think these talks are just to buy the American shares, Blitzer and Harris's shares.
Yeah.
So whether they'd be happy with Parrish. But I heard before the Americans took over, there was a massive Chinese conglomerate who wanted to buy the club lock, stock and barrel and move us to Crystal Palace Park. Now, from my inside knowledge, that was quite a way into negotiations, and then the whole Tottenham Stadium thing came up.
Are you worried this could be the same people? I mean, the Sun are reporting that Palace's owners rejected a 2017 offer from the Shanghai Narsi Investment Management Centre as it was below their 220 million quid valuation. Do you think it's the same people?
A lot of people in China, apparently. So, how many chances? I really
how many
don't
are
know.
There with more than 220 million English pounds, though?
Quite a few.
Yeah, it could potentially be the same people. I think it's mainly to do with the American owners basically wanting out of the club. It seems like it anyways. I think it was in February or late January where Bloomberg actually reported it. And then ever since that, we've heard now two takeover rumours.
They've actually invested in a Spanish club as well now.
Exactly.
The Americans.
Harris and Blitzer have apparently appointed US investment bank PJT Partners as advisors to help them cash in. So they're not messing about. Would you be averse to new owners? Are you happy with the way the club is currently run?
I mean, with the American owners coming in, the main reason for coming in was to improve the stadium and the training ground. That's what the investment was initially about. So I don't mind new owners coming in as long as that they stick to the plan and nothing goes south, because we've been looking at the stadium and I remember being there on the day when they actually announced it. There's so much potential there, and I just want if there were new owners, I want them to come in and just continue that plan. So as long as they stick on the same page as, they're on the same page as Parrish, I wouldn't mind it. But
how much was the Americans' money ring-fenced, and would the newcomers actually just be putting the money back in the pot that the Americans have taken out by leaving?
I guess that's a good question. I'm not too sure, but that's something to consider. Really, I feel it's just a matter of, well, there was an announcement, wasn't it, 2 weeks ago about how the stadium plans are on hold due to a disagreement.
Something to do with Palace providing money to up the transport infrastructure around the ground.
Yeah, so I feel like whatever happens now, even if the American owners genuinely do want out, I don't feel like we'll resume with that plan in the first place, because we don't know where the money's going to come from.
Is Parrish sticking around whatever happens?
Well, yeah.
I think so for the short term, but, he's been in, he's had 9 years, be 10 years next year, invested a lot of time, a lot of money, but I think he's clawed a lot of that money back, hasn't he?
Yeah, if the owners, if the takeover does actually happen, I don't feel like it impacts Parrish. As I said, it was the American owners. And also, with Parrish, we've criticised him on our pod, and, you know, he's still human. He makes mistakes. So if you look at overall how he has run the club, he's done a tremendous job in terms of keeping us in the Premier League for so long. However, that doesn't mean that he has made mistakes, but if you ask me, would I rather keep Parrish or want him out? Yeah, I would rather keep Parrish because he's a supporter and he understands how to run the club.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, Johnny, Newcastle are being taken over, there's rumours of, by billionaires. A couple of other clubs that are possibly in line for being taken over. I mean, if somebody wants to invest in a Premier League club, is $220 million going to be enough to actually compete, or are we just looking for that mid-table, still making money?
Well, it depends how much stake you get, I guess. Yeah. You can't really... You can't, you know, if it's the American owner stake, then it sounds about fair. But if you want the whole club, then yeah, you're right. $220 million is probably a bit less.
Wan-Bissaka and Zaha are worth that.
Oh wow!
I think if there were a takeover, it would affect Parrish simply in the sense of if you're the chairman, you do have to work, operate, talk to these people, and from his point of view, from your point of view as supporters. Is there a case of better the devil you know?
Well, when you think back to Rod Nodes, perhaps not.
Yeah.
That's before your time, exactly. Isn't it? You're looking at me thinking.
even when we... I'm not too sure. Other owners, I've basically lived Parrish era. So.
Do you think that if there is a takeover, it's going to have a significant impact in your fortunes on the pitch?
Did the Blitzer and Harris thing impact?
I'm not too sure. I think in one January transfer window, there was the reports that they did put money into the club for the transfers. But I'm not too sure if there was any truth to that. So I feel like whatever it is the main impact won't be what happens on the pitch. It's just the off-pitch stuff because we've got a waiting list and we've got the South London... There's so many people there that you can actually attract.
Yeah.
So there's opportunity there, but it's just the stadium capacity is not enough. So that should be the main focus, just to increase our revenue in the first place.
But, you know, with that new stand, how many extra fans are we going to get in there? Plus the corporates?
I think, was it 32,000? Correct me.
I mean, what extra? What will we get? 8,000 more plus the corporates?
I think 6,000 or something like that. I'm
less than that.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to question whether that much investment's worth it for such a small increase when maybe you should be putting a bit more in and maybe looking at doing that stand in a corner in one go. I know it'll cost more, but...
It's the right thing to increase the half-full... They're the main stand of second half away now. It's the right thing. You can't increase the whole stadium in one go. I feel like it's just a start, and then from then on you could just look at other areas because there's Sainsbury's behind us.
Yeah,
I think that impacts as well.
Yeah.
Before Palace can deal with any of that, I think many fans would argue that the primary concern should be holding on to your star assets, and coming up, could one of them be off to Manchester United?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio. And Crystal Palace's Aaron Wan-Bissaka is currently in action for the England under-21s.
Man of the match so far. I've seen him make two tackles and a couple of ruled in runs.
I saw him sneeze, so it's definitely nailed on. They're taking on France. But will he be Crystal Palace's Aaron Wan-Bissaka for too much longer?
He's not making much noise about it, is he? He's stayed fairly quiet, or not much has been reported. It's not like he's clamouring to leave. I know we had a bid, or we rejected a bid. Was it 40 million?
50 is the latest quoted figure.
But the thing is, it's not really 50 million. It's 30, I think it was it 30 million plus 15 million, or 35 million plus 15 million. So it's not...
With add-ons.
With add-ons, the 15 million basically add-ons. And we have every right to reject that deal because he's worth more than... Basic favor. And the add-ons were something... I'm not too sure if this is true, but the add-ons, the rumours were that, if United win the Premier League or United win the Champions League or whatever. So it's so unlikely as well in the first place.
With clubs like Newcastle getting billionaire investors in, that super three or four clubs is soon going to be five or six, isn't it? So it's going to be more difficult for that top six to actually as well, I think. But we're moving away from that. Is there something about writing off the sell-on clause for Zaha as well that I heard?
Yeah, just
within that deal. But I think they'll get bored. I think they'll start to look somewhere else, because until we can find a replacement, then it's pointless. I know Spurs are possibly getting rid of Trippier, but you know he's being put at 45 million. He's had an awful season, hasn't he?
Exactly. That's what I don't understand. If we keep Aaron Wan-Bissaka for one more season, then his value will increase if he continues to play like that. And there should be no reason why his form changed. It's not malform. He's just technically gifted like that. We've seen him do it for a whole season. I don't think that's just luck. And yeah,
against top teams as well.
Exactly. So we have no. Why should we sell Wan-Bissaka for 35 million plus 15 million add-ons? If you give us 50 million or at least 40 million plus 10 million add-ons or something like that, then yeah, that sounds more about right. Even if wasn't the initial rumour that Palace wanted something like 70 million or 60 million for Wan-Bissaka. So even the 50 million is not enough. And that's, I feel like United are far away, and I'm not too sure if they'll pay up for Wan-Bissaka. I think it depends on... I think Paul Pogba, whether he leaves or stays, that might impact in some kind of way. They raise more funds like that, but I doubt they're going to spend so much money on.
But the clubs have been talking to each other. It's not like it's just been a media thing where it's kind of being thrashed out by the press and by agents.
Yeah. Oh,
and Owen hit the post there, nearly scored. So I'm looking at the football because I'm trying to avoid looking at Boris Johnson, who's on the screen above. It's really, really hard. I'm having to shield my eyes. But yeah, I'd want to keep him. We don't know any more really than we did last week. It'll be such a shame if he goes, because I think for his own development, it'll be good for him.
Well, does that argument hold if he goes to United? Their first choice right back this season was a geriatric Antonio Valencia, who could be off to MLS. The backup is Diogo Dalot, who clearly hasn't been deemed ready. So actually, if Wan-Bissaka goes to Manchester, he might get as much football as he would at Palace.
But it's more than that as well. It seems like the club is, there's so much uncertainty at United that just going there and the outside noise, I wonder if that could impact him just like it impacted Pogba, because Pogba the other day, he did say that he's looking for a new challenge. And I was just thinking about it. I was like, Paul Pogba, before he came to United, I know it's a different league, but he was just another player. And the players that United actually surrounded him with, just useless.
But from Wan-Bissaka's point of view, would you rather be uncertain of whether you're going to finish fourth or seventh, or have a safe pair of hands in Roy Hodgson and know you'll probably be all right and finish somewhere between 16th and 10th?
Well, yeah, it depends on Wan-Bissaka's mentality. If he's happy at Palace, then why not stay at Palace? But if he's not, then go... I don't know. The only rumour has basically been United for now, any serious rumour. But if another club comes, such as a Man City, which is unlikely, but a Chelsea or Arsenal, something like that, then I'd rather he go to clubs like that than Man United.
I know he's just a commodity, because that's all football players are, commodities, really.
You big cynic.
No, I'm only going by what Simon Jordan said. But, you know, at base, they're commodities to be bought and sold and to keep your club afloat, as it were, especially, you know, if you like us. All right, we're not doing too badly now, but looking at the likes of Bolton and whatever, we've invested years and years in that player. Now, the question is, does the player kind of owe us to actually deliver for us by playing for us? Or is that time that he spent in the youth team and coming up the ranks, would the transfer fee reflect that time investment that we've put into him?
I don't think Wan-Bissaka owes us anything, in all honesty. He's, in terms of how we even got the opportunity to get the first team football, it wasn't like, oh, it's time to put Wan-Bissaka, give him a try. It was more of a fact of Fosu Mensah's injured, Joe Ward is injured, and we have no right backs. And it's just Aaron Wan-Bissaka is the next option. So I don't feel like Wan-Bissaka owes us anything in terms of us developing him. So no, I don't feel like there's anything.
And how would we'd want to replace him with another English person, wouldn't we? Just for the homegrown rule, yeah, and just to keep that going.
Last week it was Max Aarons that was reported. So
I feel Aarons has been quite heavily linked with Spurs though this week, which does make it a bit harder.
So it's going to be hard regardless. Replacing Wan-Bissaka, he's a tremendous footballer. He's still only 21, and it's, you can't really replace him like that. And ideally, you just bring it. I don't know if you want to play Joel Ward there if he leaves, or if you want to bring in another player.
Well, that's the thing. Is there an argument with that Wan-Bissaka money? Say you do get 50, 60 million. I'm saying, well, we're not going to get a right back of his quality or close to his quality, but we can get a right back who's fine and actually strengthen our creative midfield areas, bring in a striker. You know, if you sold Wan-Bissaka, played Joel Ward at right back and signed Michy Batshuayi, would that soften the blow?
I still feel like we need depth. You saw last season with the left back position and what it meant for Patrick Van Aanholt. I feel like if we put Joel Ward out there, when he has played right back, he has struggled for most parts. I feel like regardless of what happens, if Wan-Bissaka does leave, then we still need another right back there because we can't rely on Joel Ward alone. I feel like Joel Ward in the future, he's going to be a decent centre back instead of a right back, because he has played there and he has looked decent. He just hasn't. I don't feel like he's got the legs to keep playing at right back.
Talking of strength in depth, I know Bissaka's going to be a thing that rolls on and on. I noticed today that Lucas Perry is off, the young Brazilian goalkeeper. Who does that leave us with on the goalkeeping front? Bearing in mind that Mr. Speroni's gone now, we're left with Wayne and Bicenti. Would we need a third goalkeeper in? I know we've talked about Butland and whether we want first-team football, and we've done that to death already. So is there anybody else in the pipeline in the goalkeeping position?
I really wouldn't focus on third choice goalkeeper right now in the market. I'd rather someone from the academy just plays a role as third choice goalkeeper, as it's going to be very rare for them to play in the first place. And I'd rather that we invest in areas that are needed, because we're talking about not even second choice, third choice goalkeeper. And you saw, Jules
Speroni was third choice. He got two or three games.
Yeah, but it's just two or three games. I wouldn't really focus on spending much money there, because we're limited as we are right now, and we need a striker. If Wan-Bissaka leaves, we need a right back. So there's so many other areas that we should be focusing on rather than just focus on third choice goalkeeper in university.
But it takes a whole kind of searching for people out of the equation if we keep Aaron. I mean, it's good that we've got somebody who very, very few people had heard of this time last year, or maybe a bit, it started the season before, didn't it? And suddenly we got this huge asset on our hands. It's like money out of nothing, isn't it?
And they say Wan-Bissakas don't grow on trees.
Yeah, exactly.
The big question for you two, though, now is he staying? Because we can watch him now against France. He looks every bit a £50 million right back to me already in today's market. He is going to get better. And when United come calling, it's quite hard to say no. Can you hold on to him?
I think we can. I feel like Aaron Wan-Bissaka, he's not that type of person who would push out from the club. Nothing has happened so far to indicate that. So unless United actually do pay up, then which at first I thought there was a chance, but I don't feel like it would happen now. So I feel like, he stays. Wan-Bissaka, potentially. I'm 60-40 on him staying.
If he does go to Man United, will we sting? Our wingers don't like him.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
I guess one of the great chants.
Yeah. Old Trafford away, just singing Our Wingers Are Like Him.
They don't sing at Old Trafford, do they? All tourists. They've got song sheets in a singing section, haven't they? Yeah.
Does it worry you a bit that for United, the extra 10 million quid isn't the sticking point? If what Palace are saying is 50 million's no, but 60 million is yes, United will pay that.
Will they, though?
Yes. Because if they're committed enough to him as their main target, and Solskjaer likes him as much as we're hearing he does, what's the 10 million? He's not Arsene Wenger, who goes, oh, another £2.50, not for me, too rich for my blood. If they want Wan-Bissaka, they'll get him.
But it doesn't. Well, the second offer, the reported offer of 35 plus 15 million, I still feel like that's too low, and that's the improved offer. So where did it start?
If they give you 50 up front.
50 up front plus add-ons?
plus 10 potential in add-ons. Do you take it?
Yes.
To if reinvest. We can get somebody else. The other thing you've got to think about is who else is there that Man United could get in for that position from other clubs?
Mm. We're in a brilliant position as like right now, because you keep Wan-Bissaka, his value goes up next season. If you sell him now, we're going to get good money. So it's not something that we're stressing about as Palace fans, because he's just a brilliant player. And the longer that we keep him, I genuinely do think that his value will increase by the season. He's only 21, which is just ridiculous.
Now, earlier on, I don't know if it was towards the end of last season, that we were saying we thought we were going to lose Wilf and Aaron, or maybe one or the other. Is it possible we might not lose any of them?
That would be brilliant. But with Wilf, I don't see... Right now, there's no indications of him leaving.
He had an interview with a paper that that was reported by Ben, he of Back of the Nesh Paris back in the day, now works for a newspaper I cannot bring myself to name. But in the interview, Wilf was talking about good having his dad close by.
Yeah.
Since he's had his stroke.
But he would still be vaguely close to his dad if he moved to North London.
But no one, who in North London is going to pay that much for Wilf?
Arsenal are thinking about it.
I reported that Arsenal transfer budget is 40 million, so I doubt they can actually afford Zaha.
Because they did say there was some rumour that they were going to give us cash plus three players.
Yeah, but those three players were going to be
Jenkinson, yeah, that's just
El Nenny and my little brother. So I wouldn't take that too seriously.
I'll just block the number. If they actually offered it, you have to block their number. That's just rude. Block
the number. That is the message from Back of the Nest, DR Kernaz. Well, we've talked about one of Palace's young stars. Coming up, let's focus on one of their older legends.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and a quick update for you from the England under-21s against France. High drama. The French were given a penalty. Henderson was equal to it. He stepped up and made a massive save. Updates for you throughout the show, but for now, it's time for our Legend of the Week.
See what your club legend was wearing at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. The place for football shirts.
It's time for our first ever Legend of the Week here on the Crystal Palace Fan Show. Gents, who have you gone for this week?
Julian Speroni.
I thought you were going to sing it then. Julian Speroni. Yeah, I mean, he had to be our first one because he's kind of left the club this week. And what a fantastic servant to the club. The fact that he is so important behind the scenes, especially with his language skills, bringing new players in to help them bed in, as he did with Gaeta. He was happy to wait to get his place back once he lost it to the pyjama-trousered Gabor Kirali, who is also a legend, being the oldest player ever in a World Cup.
Great trousers as well.
Yeah.
Yep. And he only wore those because he couldn't find his shorts, apparently.
And then it became a tradition.
It became a tradition. And, people were getting Kirali pyjamas for Christmas amongst the Palace fraternity. But, what is there to say, DR, about Speroni? He seems like a decent human being. He pulled off some magnificent saves. My only criticism of him is he could have been a better penalty saver.
Better penalty saver.
Yeah.
Well, he did save us in many ways. In terms of, would we even be in the Premier League right now if Jules didn't make that save against Brighton in the playoffs, against Watford in the playoff finals? So he's made some tremendous saves and has come up big. And the thing with Jules that I was thinking about is that I was wondering, where does it rank among Palace's all-time best, in goalkeepers? And I really haven't seen anyone apart from Jules in my lifetime. And I feel like that's pretty incredible due to the fact that nowadays you just see players moving about all the time. And as you mentioned, the things he done off the pitch and how much, even the testimonial and everything like that, you could just see this man. He understood the club. And sometimes you need players like that at a club. And he was just exactly that.
You mentioned the testimonial. I think what's testament to him as a person is the amount of Dundee fans that came down for that game. And despite the fact it was 10 years since he left Dundee, they thought very highly of him and spoke very highly of him. I know due to that testimonial that there's quite a few Palace fans go to Dundee games now because of it, and have kind of linked up.
Yeah, there's been a connection now, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Do we know what he's doing now?
He's a free agent. He wants game time. That's what everyone's basically saying, and that's why he's leaving us. So I wonder where he will go.
What was the worst moment? I know we're talking about a legend, but you've got to compare bad moments with terrific moments. Was there anything where you thought, oh, actually, this bloke's a bit dodgy? Because I was when he first came in, the infamous ball giving away against Everton, which cost us the game, or might have cost us a win. It's so far back in the midst of time. That sort of knocked his confidence a bit, and he was replaced pretty quickly. I mean, I felt the same way about him then as I did with Perry Suckling. Now, Perry Suckling used to be my favourite player, and he still was, even after that 9-0 drubbing against Liverpool. That was his undoing, and we managed to get Nigel Martin in after that. I thought he'd lose his place completely, but the fact that he's stuck with it, does that mean nobody else was interested in him, or was he just determined to cement his place back at Crystal Palace?
I feel like he was just determined. You can see by what he'd done after that and how long he stayed and how he's improved as a player. But where do you rank him? Where do you rank him among...
Crystal Palace goalkeepers?
Yeah, Palace goalkeepers.
For legendness... Is that a word? Legendness?
Well, it's a word now.
Legendness. Legendness. Now. It'll be on the top trump card for Julius Bronia. Legendness. Legend power. Definitely up there. However, as goalkeeping ability, I'd put him behind Nigel Martin, who I'd have at the top, and John Jackson, who I saw play once for Orient after he left us. But my dad used to bang on about John Jackson being such a terrific keeper all the time that actually it sounds like he was the boss.
But when we're talking about legends, how much of it is about how good they are? Because Spironi wasn't ever a world-class talent. A big part of this is connection with the fans and personality. What did you feel he was like? He's like.
What? So you're talking about
Spironi
as a player?
Like, yeah, but as a man as well. Because when you love someone as much as you two love Spironi, you're not just loving him for his exploits on the pitch.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, the biggest thing for Jules is that what he gave on the pitch, he also, you know, off the pitch, it was that same effort in terms of speaking with the fans, and that's what stood out for me personally. For Jules, like, he was that type of man that he would speak to you like outside the ground. He's not the type to run away, and you could see it when new players did come into the club. He would introduce them and show them around, and I feel like small things like that matter a lot to some new players who come from different countries and aren't used to the culture here. He would introduce them and he would help them out. And I feel like that does actually play a big part in terms of settling in players. And that's why I feel like with Jules is, yes, we've lost a great man on the pitch and off the on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, because our new transfers now, there isn't a Julian Spironi who can teach them about the club. So someone else has to step up.
Yeah, he's almost like the ambassador for the team, isn't he?
Mm. Do you think we're getting to a point in modern football where that kind of role will completely go and the idea of a club identity will completely go and we will never see a player who's been at a club for a decade educating new boys about what it is to represent Crystal Palace because the whole culture and the mercenary nature of the game is going to shift?
Yeah, I feel like it's 100% changing, but it depends on Wilf. Let's see how long Wilf stays. Maybe he's the next.
So you think there could be a 37-year-old Wilf in Zaha going, well, here's down what the
wing,
it means.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, in the training ground.
Limping down the wing.
Yeah, well, it's a good point that you made because, as I said, it is changing now. We don't have many Julian Spironis in football because of how the market is and how clubs see it more as a business rather than just a game. And
also players that come in young and are on ridiculous salaries at such a young age. I've just found a quote. He said, talking about other players, I won't do the accent because I can't do an Argentine Scottish accent. Every time a new player comes to the club, I always try and make them understand what it means to play for Crystal Palace. It's a place not like other clubs. You have the atmosphere at Selhurst Park, and I haven't seen that anywhere else. It's just incredible, and I would like them to understand that. I think it's my job as a senior player to make sure they know that if we can all understand that, then we will have a better idea of how we need to approach things and the way we work on a day-to-day basis. You can only do that when you see the faces of the supporters and the young kids in the stands and after winning a game. And also, when you lose the game, there are some sad faces. Now, as a Premier League club, we can just say, OK, have we done it? Is it hard work? So as soon as you can relax, things can really go wrong. So he knows what needs to be done. And he's just such a nice bloke. I chatted with him before we played Dover. Yeah, Dover in the FA Cup.
That's a proper glamour tie.
That was Alan Pardew's first game.
I was there. I remember that game. I loved it.
Alan Pardew's first ever game in charge as well. When he came in, he just came in and became manager.
And
didn't
the rest is history. I remember him walking away after the, was it 4-0 victory? Yeah, I think it was 4-0. And he just smiles and everything. And yeah, it was good. It was good while it lasted.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we talking about Pardew or...
Yeah, Pardew. Yeah, Pardew.
He's still hasn't got a job, has he?
Yeah, I don't understand how it's not in MLS. I thought he would be there by now.
As a final note on Spironi, what was his greatest moment in a Palace shirt?
Oh, that's so hard.
Was there a save in the playoff?
Yeah, there's two. Well, there's a Brighton save.
Yep.
And a playoff final where Deeney...
Second half.
So yeah. I don't know which one to pick. I think it's between them two. I have to go with the playoff finals. It's a bigger occasion.
Yeah.
Even though Brighton, you're still playing Brighton and it's the playoffs, but yeah, playoff final. That was a massive save and it's just small things like that. That save, if that went in right now, would who knows where Palace would be.
Bolton. My abiding memory is when the HF had sorted out lots of banners for Spironi. I think he must have just reached 10 years playing for the club and there was big sign, Manos de Dios, Hand of God. And you could just see the emotion on his face where he saw what he understood what he meant to the supporters, if that makes sense.
Well, that, I think, is why Julian Spironi is your Legend of the Week.
See what your club legend was wearing at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. The place for football shirts. This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz and Nick Gillard of Back of the Nest. We're talking TV fixtures coming up for this year because, Nick, it's getting harder than ever before, more expensive than ever before for fans to follow their teams.
Yeah, I noticed at the weekend, Amazon Prime. Are they different to Amazon Prime Sport? Is that another subscription you've got to get?
In this country, it's just Amazon Prime you would need.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I've already got that. But if you're an armchair fan and you want to follow your club and see as many live games as you can without resorting to other means, Sky's expensive. BT Sport comes with a lot of the packages you buy anyway. And with Amazon as well, it's just getting silly.
Exactly. You need free subscriptions, basically, to watch Premier League football. And it's just bang out order. What I prefer is the Premier League takes all the rights back and they actually have their own streaming service. So they said, I think like that...
They wouldn't make enough money.
But I feel like right now it's going to get worse though. Pirating is going to increase.
The problem is you'd have a problem there where you'd have clubs would be getting a huge revenue because they've got such worldwide support. I mean, that would help. Man, you know, well, I don't know if it would because Man City's owners are a bit multi-billionaires. They're a country, aren't they? And Man City haven't really got a massive fan base yet. They've still got, you know, mainly... I don't know, you see some of the European games, there are so many empty seats there. But you look at Man United or Liverpool, how much revenue would they get in if they were in charge of their own streaming services? And it would just make... the gap between the richest and the poorest, although they're by no means poor in any sense of the word, clubs, it would grow it, wouldn't it?
It might, but on the other side of the coin, is there a potential positive to you needing three subscriptions in the sense that three different broadcasters broadcasting this competition, competing for the rights, stops one from getting a monopoly and being able to charge you whatever they like?
I just... you what? So Sky, I don't know. I don't have Sky Sports, but Sky Sports is around £20 a month.
About 10 years ago, 15 yeah, exactly. years ago.
And then you have to pay for BT Sports.
Yep.
And if you pay for all of them, you're looking at up to £885.40 per year, which is almost enough for a season ticket.
It's going to just increase illegal streaming. Honestly, that's what I think. It's just going to increase illegal streaming. And there's some people that just can't afford it, but they love their clubs with a passion. £800 a year just for subscriptions.
Do you think that fans are not being considered by the governing bodies?
100% not.
Yeah, look at VAR, but we'll come back to that later on when we talk about the World Cup. But no, my biggest worry about this is, I think it might have been Danny Baker who said it, football's gone from a sport where the TV cameras were invited in to watch what was going on to now where a sport where the TV companies are controlling what's going on. And that isn't a good way to be. And there's been some talk with the Amazon Prime thing. It's two games in December. All matches are going to be on free. Well, apart from the evening kickoffs, going to be 3 p.m. Now, quite often, and it doesn't affect us because we'll be at Selhurst anyway. On those, we've got two home games. Yeah. We've got the West Ham game on Boxing Day. I can't remember what the other game is earlier in the month, but they're both at home. I tend, if we aren't at home, and if Bromley are at home, or if Cray Wanderers are at home, or, you know, I quite often go and see them. Now, if I can see Palace or another team on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, is that going to put me off putting money in Bromley's pocket? And how many other people are going to think like that? Because you go to Bromley games and Palace are away, there's quite a few Palace fans there. You get quite a few Millwall fans and Charlton fans as well. They get on all right there. but the lower league clubs are going to lose a source of revenue. Tranmere famously used to play on a Friday night so they could get the Liverpool and Everton supporters over there to go on and watch. The band Half Man Half Biscuit famously refused to play on the Tube because it was on a Friday night. The Tube, the football programme, not the underground. Because that's when Tranmere played.
But there is potentially a way round needing all three subscriptions, which Nick, you mentioned in passing there. All of the games that Amazon Prime has the rights to are conveniently confined to December, meaning that if you're not a Prime subscriber and you get a bit clever with it, you could just subscribe for the 1 month, watch your football, cancel it, £8.
Prime for a year is a yearly thing, though.
You can get it for just a month trial. So you could swing it that way. But the expense anyway is extraordinary. BT Sport, you're looking at £30 a month on top of apparently the current best Sky Sports subscription, which includes broadband, of £67.50 a month. £100 a month, even without Amazon, even without the third one, £100 a month. But we're sitting here complaining about how much you have to pay. Well, the flip side of that is that's why your clubs are getting so much money. Would you be happy to lose that TV revenue?
Well, if it happens to everybody, then it happens to everybody.
So would you be willing for that to happen to everybody?
But what exactly will change? So what, we won't have Monday Night Football?
We wouldn't be able to pay the players the exorbitant wages.
The Premier League would not be able to compete in the way that it currently does with other continental leagues.
So we're just going to have 3 p.m. kickoffs, that's it? In terms of the...
No, and the money you'd get would be drastically reduced, yeah. Which would mean if a Chelsea was trying to compete with a Barcelona in the transfer market, they wouldn't be in as strong a position as they are now.
Yeah, I understand that. But yeah, so it'd just be... I wouldn't. I'd rather have the TV deal there.
So you'd rather pay the money and keep the money in the Premier League?
Yeah, because I'm fortunate enough that I could go to away games, and but there's others that... but I'm just thinking about myself right now. Yeah, I'd rather.
Selfish.
Yeah, I'm selfish. But I'm just thinking about the situation that I'm in. I'd rather that the TV deal is there, because if you're thinking about it right now, I don't think we'll have Sacco. We won't have Zaha and the wages he's on. We won't have Benteke, even though some people don't want him. But yeah, I'd rather.
But where would they play?
What?
They've got to play somewhere.
Well, that's good.
They're not going to stop playing football, are they?
Move abroad.
Yeah.
Is there any way back from this, from football? Are we going to hit a ceiling where fans get to a point where it's too much and they go, I've had it, I'm not bothering subscribing anymore, and these big providers have to drop their prices? Or actually, are we now just dealing with unlimited growth.
Illegal streaming is going to increase. That's what I'm going. That's what I think. Illegal streaming is going to increase because people, they're just not simply, your ordinary person is not going to pay £800 a year on subscription services. There's always ways around it. And unless you reduce the prices, which the only way you can technically do that is what I think is by the Premier League getting their own rights and just broadcasting it like that. I know you don't agree to that, but I feel like that's the thing that should happen. One service, so the Premier League get the rights and more affordable, and as a result, illegal streaming would decrease, and more people would actually subscribe to it.
Mm. I'd be happier if more money trickled down to the lower leagues.
Because we were rather sold that as a promise, weren't we? And it isn't happening.
And we were told that England would have more chance of winning the World Cup as well because of the extra money.
Well, arguably, first semi-final for quite a while.
All that happened is we just bought more and more expensive players, or players' wages went up faster than inflation. So the money was kind of subsumed by other things. I don't know. I'd like there to be a more equitable distribution of the cash, because it's criminal for the money that's swilling around in the Premier League for clubs like Bolton. Okay, there's mismanagement, there's problems with stadiums.
But we shouldn't be
seeing clubs going bust. And then the counter argument to that is, well, look at Bradford Park Avenue, they went bust. It's happened all the time. And actually, not that many clubs have gone to the wall. I think Accrington Stanley went out of business once as well, didn't they? And Aldershot and...
They're all
making their way back, Maidstone United. But it's going to be when you get a high-profile club that goes to the wall, I think, that people will actually start to sit up and notice. And Bolton, okay, they're League One. They're a big club, aren't they?
Been in the Premier League in the last 10 or so years. So. Yeah.
JJ Okocha, did he play for Bolton?
He did. He also played for Hull City. Played for Hull City because he said God came to him in a dream and told him to sign for Hull City.
Out of every club, Hull City.
Whether or not you believe in a higher power, I think one thing I can confidently say God has never done is come to anyone in a dream and tell them to sign for Hull City.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz and Nick Gillard of Back of the Nest. And we're talking VAR, which has yet again taken centre stage at the Women's World Cup this summer. Nick, you weren't a fan to start with. Are you happy?
It was absolute varnage last night, wasn't it?
You're never happy.
No, that... I felt so sorry for the Nigerian goalkeeper.
So talk us through what happened.
There was a penalty, and from one of the 14 camera angles...
For the French.
It looked like a penalty from one of the 14 camera angles. But it pulled the play back, and you had 3 or 4 minutes. The penalty was given, which is fair enough. It was a foul. And one of the French defenders missed the penalty. I think it hit the post or went wide of the post.
Yeah, it was Wendy Renard hit the outside of the left post, went wide.
Because I remember thinking, of course, she's not having a good World Cup because she scored that fantastic own goal in
the
first
game. She did score two against South Korea, though.
Yeah. So. And maybe we should sign her up.
You know what? She's got the best goal record for a centre-half I've ever seen. She plays for Lyon, roughly 170 league games, 65 goals.
That's better than Benteke.
Yeah,
the goalkeeper in my son's team's got a better goal scoring record than Benteke. Anyway, the goalie goes to kick the ball out, and then suddenly the game stops again, and the goalkeeper has taken 1 foot off the goal line, which is the rule that you've got to keep 1 foot on the goal line to stay on the goal line.
Yeah.
Now, that's really harsh. If she'd saved it, and her movement before led to her saving it, I could understand. Bit of common sense. But the fact that the player missed, then they took another penalty. She belted it in. It was a brilliant penalty.
She went the entire opposite way. So she tried for bottom left the first time. She went, have some of that. I'm going top right.
Yeah. In a French accent. But... they showed the replay of the penalty. Three French players were in the area before she struck the ball. Why didn't they pull that back?
But isn't this the problem, Nick, in the sense that the issue here is not anything inherently to do with VAR as a system. It's the way it's being applied. Exactly. So, for example, the keeper coming off the line is a bizarre rule in football because keepers do it every single time, pretty much. And you either, from a VAR point of view, the issue there is not the system. It's about whether you are applying it in the same way every single time. And if VAR is now going to be used to make sure that the keeper is glued to his or her line right up to the point of contact with the ball, you need to apply that on every single penalty kick. But I don't think you can blame VAR. You got to blame the ref for the way that she's applying VAR.
But then you have a thing quite often, you'll hear the commentators say, oh, we're going to VAR before the ref makes any kind of sign that they're... Well, they do the square telly thing, don't they? That's the sign they make.
There's no damage. Yeah. I'm sorry, VAR has to be there next season. It has to be there for... there's no damage.
But another law was broken. What laws does VAR not cover?
But that's
cover?
Not the VAR's that's the fault. That's not the VAR's fault.
No, but, but you are both right here.
The ref cannot see behind her. Sorry, the ref cannot see behind her.
But Nick, this is precisely the point, and DR's spot on, because what's got to happen is there needs to be a clear understanding, as you say, of which rules apply, because VAR will be farcical if we get into a situation where every time a tiny little rule is broken, we VAR it. If we start VARing foul throws.
What if it leads up to a goal, though?
What on earth? Well, we'll have to. But the point is, they either need to say, we're only VARing the incident that gives away the penalty, for example, or we're doing everything. There needs to be clear guidelines about how it's being applied.
But next season, we'll see what happens with us, because people keep saying, oh, Zaha accused of, you know, he's a diver, he's that. So next season, when VAR does finally get introduced in the Premier League, let's actually see what's given now. Because I feel like Zaha could have got more penalties last season. But
he got quite a few.
Yeah, he got a few, but he could have got even more. And at times, he was wrongfully accused of diving by referees.
He got booked once, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And when we looked at it back in the replays, was it a dive? No, it was not a dive. And that's what I'm saying. VAR will help that. VAR has no damage. At the end of the day, what it does is that it comes in and helps referee. Some decisions, you may see it differently. Some I may see it differently. It depends on how the referee sees it. But it's there to help the referee.
How much time added on was there in that game yesterday? Do you know?
Nine minutes.
Sure. But they played 10 minutes over. My poor friend Elgin, who's got to get back to Scotland on a Saturday afternoon, isn't going to be liking it if games are finishing that late.
I don't think every situation will be that late. I think it will be as the seasons go on, it will be improved on. It's just newly introduced now, so
and you've got
expect them kind of times.
You've got to be able to see it on the screen because, you know, quite often I've seen players.
They are going to show it in the Premier League. Apparently, they're going to show it on a big screen. That's what they said. So as fans, we're going to be able to see what the referee's seeing, if it is true, what I saw. So that is a bonus, but we need it there. We really do need it there. In the Premier League, with the pace that it's played and just so many things going on at the same time, referees do need help and VAR is a solution for it. Not every decision is going to be correct. There's none of that, but it will help the referees in terms of making that decision making. And we might pick up more points or we might lose more points due to it, but we just have to deal with it.
It spoils the game as a spectacle for the paying spectator. That's all I'll say. It just breaks it up too
well,
much.
Well, you say it spoils it for the spectator in the stadium.
Yes.
It adds more drama. Well, should you? Because at the point where you're paying roughly £1,000 for your football and all of the TV subscribers who are getting all those subscriptions are paying £850, why do the people in the stadium take precedence?
Because without us, there wouldn't be a Crystal Palace. We wouldn't. We've been going there for years.
There wouldn't have been, but now the sad fact is there would be.
Yeah, because of the TV.
No, it's frustrating. Yeah. I'm not saying I like it, but that is the truth. The fans in the stadium no longer really define a football club. They do in terms of its character, but not its ability to exist.
Yeah, which is a shame. Because it's, you know, it's working class sport. It's working man's game. It was our release on a Saturday afternoon from the drudgery of the factory work. You know, most of the teams came from factories. Look at West Ham. Came out of the Royal Engineer, the engineers. Crystal Palace was actually people who were rebuilding the Crystal Palace after it got moved from Hyde Park to Crystal Palace Park. So, you know, it's just taking it away.
No, I agree. It's a sad, sad element of modern football. And hopefully we will see a shift. Hopefully, of course, we'll see Aaron Wan-Bissaka still in a Palace shirt. And you'll have to check in with us next week here on the Crystal Palace Fan Show to find out if he's still there.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from LoveSport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at LoveSport Radio on Twitter.